WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively getting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. I will have a series of dates and cool places. In the meantime, you can follow along at Baltimore Positive as I launch all the August stuff. You can see all the crab cakes, all the beers my wife and I drank, all the weight that I didn't gain back in August, all of it brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery, letting ourselves play. We're giving away some Raven scratch-offs all fall long, as well as our friends at Goodwill. And I am rolling my Goodwill shirt out after having donated a whole bunch of my summer stuff during the fall to Goodwill. And our friends, of course, at Window Nation, where 866-90-NATION plugs you into what I got plugged into, which is new windows, and it's fall, and the bugs are out, and the sound is out, and the economy is in, and good things are happening with Window Nation, so we do appreciate them. I love having authors on. If you've been at the BaltimorePositive.com lately, you see that we have added some author sections, because one thing I've been doing for 31 years now is having people on who write books. This book came to me, and I want to have more of this sort of thing on the program. So if you are reading, watching, hearing, and you're a Baltimore author and you have a good Baltimore story to tell, I love telling them. It's part of my format as well here at Baltimore Positive. I have great friends that look out for me. And let me know when things like Stop the Road, stories from the trenches of Baltimore Road Wars, and Evans Paul comes on. And I don't know, Evans, first off, welcome, man. What's going on? Thanks for making a little time to talk about your book, man.
Hey, Nestor, thanks for having me on. If you don't mind, just a real quick side, you guys do a great job in covering the Ravens, but next year, man, you got to pay attention to the Orioles.
Well, Luke and I pay attention to the Orioles, and they certainly have drawn a lot of attention. I'm glad you love baseball. I'll get to your Adley Rutschman and your Gunnar Henderson thoughts here and your Grayson Rodriguez thoughts at the end. But certainly for Rhodes going through Baltimore, let's just start with this. I'm from Dundalk. I was born in 68. My parents never really drove, so I was always on the streetcar lines that became the buses in the early 70s. And my dad took the bus to the point. He worked at Bethlehem Steel. So transportation for my family, and this is something near and dear to my heart when I talk to Wes Moore or I talk to Larry Hogan about the Red Line, it's just transportation in general. We don't talk about it unless we need it. And if we're rich and white and in the suburbs and can pay our bills and have a little something put away, we probably have a car, and I know Dennis Kalatsos would sell a Coons Sub Ford vehicle to you or anyone else at a fair and reasonable price and treat you well along the way. That roads for me in the 70s were just ubiquitous. But I'll tell you this, man, 95 came rolling through Eastwood, right at Eastern Avenue in the late 70s and split neighborhoods. I know 97 in Glen Burnie. So I've seen roads built when I've been old enough to understand it. But Evans, the best story I have for you is the first guest we sat down with on Baltimore Positive and went on campus was the great Barbara Mikulski. And we went over to Hopkins and we sat in her office and we said wouldn't mess with her hair. She didn't wear a headset. And I defer to the great senator. Let her wear whatever she wants. Her family made me a lot of bakery products back in Highland 10 in a day, because 23 and the 10 went by there. And she told me the story of how the Fort McHenry Tunnel got built. And how that they wanted to turn Boston Street into a highway. And we've seen other cities, and I've been all over the world seeing places where highways have been ripped up and put down. So I am just delighted to feature you and your book and have the backstories of the road to nowhere and all the things that I guess could have happened, right? I mean, the Beltway was built when I was here, but it was new to my parents, right? And how all of these roads have gotten built. And I'm sure politics and all that. You picked a meaty topic for a nerd like me, Evans.
Well, good. I'm glad. I'm glad it's getting some traction. And, you know, I transportation decisions are huge for Baltimore. You know, Baltimore was sort of a backcountry town before the building of the B&O Railroad. And I think the road wars are right behind the building of the B&O Railroad as to the significance of what Baltimore looks like today.
It is wacky that 83 dumps into the city and you can't just go through the city. You gotta have to get off. You have to navigate. You have to sit in traffic, squeegee boys, whatever. But you're going down. If you're going from Mount Washington to, the airport, you have to turn around and go back, or go, it, it, it's not well designed. You know, like I've been all over the world. I've been to places where transportation works and subways work. And I mean, I was on the subway the day it opened, Thanksgiving weekend. Was it 82, 83? My parents, we took the subway to Owings Mills and back just to get on a subway. Went downtown on the bus and then got on the subway. My dad liked it because we didn't have to pay more. And so, I mean, I remember these marvelous things and the opening of Harbor Place and all that. But are we held back as a community by how poorly sort of constructed so much of this has been, and much of it racially based without question?
Yeah. Well, a lot of the road wars were more or less about that exact question. The highway planners at the time and the political establishment were behind a whole complex of highways that would have ripped their way through Fells Point, Canton, Federal Hill, Harlem Park, the area that's now devastated partly by the Highway to Nowhere, Lincoln Park. So a lot of what happened in the road wars was that the communities and the activists, the preservationists and the environmentalists came together and said, you know, we're not just going to build all these highways that might conceivably be needed because they're, the downsides are huge. Think about what Baltimore would be without Federal Hill, Inner Harbor East, Fells Point, and Canton.
Can I ask you a question? Because this picture here, and I let me stand here and maybe help people see it a little bit better if because of my Chiron, but if they can, you have this depicted as like a highway being Pratt Street and literally a highway being where Pier 6 would be across to what is now the Four Seasons, right? So is that real? Is that like a real drawing from 1952 or something?
That 1960, yeah, that was the city planning department's plan for the highway. prior to that, the plan for getting through the downtown area was to go through Mount Vernon, and that was a non-starter for a lot of people. So Phil Darling, the director of the Planning Commission at the time, came up with this plan to put the highway along Pratt Street and those Inner Harbor piers, and then to exit through Southeast Baltimore through Fells Point and Canton and what's now Inner Harbor East.
Why not a tunnel underneath at some point there? I mean, I've been to Kowloon in Hong Kong, and you can get from Kowloon to Hong Kong very quick. There's a tunnel from one piece of water to the other. I never understood because I lived, by the way, this picture behind me, this is where I lived for 19 years. So this is literally my living room. I lived at Harbor Court. And I often, people would be over at the Rusty Scupper and say, how do I get to Fells Point from here? Boat, right? Wait a half an hour. Cab in the old days, Uber, but like not walk. You know, I mean, we do it because we're crazy. My wife and I walk to Dundalk. We'll walk to Patterson Boy. We walk everywhere. But and that's how we stay skinny. But just in general, I had never thought about this till I lived downtown about, and now I see these wild stories and hear Barbara Mikulski as a 50-year-old. I'm 53. I guess it was about 3.5 years ago that Barbara Mikulski sat in her office and just bled my ears about, you're not bringing that highway through Highlandtown. I'll tell you right now. And I'm thinking, wow. So this must have been for you. Your wow was go write this book, right? Like what made you write the book? Was there some one of these wacky things that said, this is a book for me?
Well, there were three themes that really drew me into writing the book. One was that it was a tremendous victory of sort of outsiders and those who were not being heard over the economic and political establishment. That happens so rarely over very significant decisions that I think just that and wanting to know who these guys were, I wanted to make the unsung heroes into song heroes. And the second theme was what we were talking about, that had the highways been built, the waterfront would have been ruined from Federal Hill through what's now Harbor East.
But it wasn't beautiful then. Yeah. Like in 68, nobody saw. I mean, I've seen the video of then Mayor Schaefer kind of had hair and, you know, it had some color on the top a little bit. And he was there with a shovel when what is now McKeldin Square, and I guess what is the M&S Grill, and you know what used to be City Lights, I guess, on no, this side. I always get my Chiron wrong. You know, in the main part of the square, I saw him down there with grass. There was just grass in the earth, and it became the aquarium and the science center and the World Trade Center and then Harbor Place after. But like, I can't imagine in 1960 that you would go down there and say, this is going to be pretty one day. We're going to have a million tourists down here. You know, like I don't know that that was, and I've talked to folks like Bill at Fadley's, who remembers coming to Baltimore in 1961. He doesn't call it McKeldin. He calls it something else. He calls it by its original name because he's pissed about that 65 years later. But it really is learning this history. The roads are probably the most important, not taking anything else away, but it really did change everything about the city, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, and Schaefer was the number one guy prosecuting the highways, and he had a blind spot for this. There was an onslaught of information that would have caused a level-headed person to reevaluate. It's just not the community opposition. There were six lawsuits. The highways were in legal trouble. They were costing way more than what our cash-strapped city could afford. Schaefer just had blinders on. It was maybe one of those cases where, you know, he was only letting information in that reinforced what he already believed. And he went, you know, all the way through the 70s. He was elected in 72, and before that he was president of city council. And he went all the way through the 70s still trying to get these highways done. And it was really very apparent about 1975 that they were too expensive for the city and faced too many obstacles. And Schaefer kept going. And the result was that we missed an enormous opportunity in the mid-70s. In the mid-70s, that was when the gas crisis hit, there was a whole movement in the country to reinforce mass transit. And
is that how the subway got built? As you know, I was 13, 14, 80, 81, 82, 83, somewhere in the subway came, right?
Yeah. Yep.
That was a 75, 76 kind of decision at that time?
Yeah. But one of the reasons we do not have a good mass transit system, that we've got this sort of one-legged subway, and then we've got the light rail in one other leg, but it's hardly a comprehensive system, and it does not represent a real alternative to highways. The strongest old eastern cities, Boston, Philadelphia, New York, and so on, the strongest of those have really good mass transit systems.
Well, the strongest cities in the world do that, right? So, I mean, I travel all over the world. I've been on subways in Seoul, Tokyo, Beijing, all over Europe. It's another place. It's not – Baltimore doesn't have anything like that. And we have so many assets, right? I talk about this all the time on Baltimore Positive. By the way, Evans Paul's here. Stop the Road is the book. I want to make sure everybody knows about it. Stories from the Trenches of Baltimore's Road Wars. We're going to talk more to Evans about the baseball. But before we do that, I'm talking about all this. But I've been to places where it's robust, and I've also been to Dallas, and I've also been to Los Angeles, where it wasn't thought through at all, and it's an issue, right? I mean, literally. And then I've been to Chicago, where, you know, it's underground, and in Minnesota, they thought about indoor walkways because it's so cold. I don't know that America has done this well, right? So when you're talking about this as a Baltimore issue or a Baltimore book, I often, when I, every time I ride a subway, and I say this story six times a year because I go to New York a couple times and see shows and stuff. I get on a subway in New York and I'm thinking, who in 2022 would ever have the political courage to build this or dream this? The subway that makes New York, New York, the subway that makes Tokyo, Tokyo. When you go there, you don't have to speak Japanese. You can figure out where to get sushi or cheeseburger or McDonald's, whatever you want. And the getting around when my wife and I go to Paris or London, just we just go, man. You just get on the train, you pay $3, you get a card, you get, hang around Paris. You know, Baltimore's not that way, you know, and America's not that way. You literally, yeah. Cleveland might be a little bit that way, but there aren't many places where it's that way in this country.
No, that's right. Baltimore could have made a lot of progress on a better mass transit system if we would have traded in our highway dollars in 1973 to 1975. In 1973, Congress enacted a law that was called the Bust the Trust legislation. Prior to that, the highway taxes, gas taxes, and so on, could only fund interstate highways. In 1973, Congress said cities now have the ability to switch those funds to mass transit. But Schaefer still had the highway blinders on, and he kind of missed that mid-70s opportunity where we could have traded in those funds for mass transit and ended up with a much more complete mass transit system. In the long run, I still come out in Schaefer's camp for everything that he did for the city, but just in the context of the research I did on the highway wars, his decision making does not look good.
Well, I'd say this to you after being with Senator Mikulski. It's been almost 3.5 years now, right? So it's been a long time. We lived through a plague, Evans, sitting with her, the extra part of that, I tell the story all the time. Every time I go through the tunnel, I think, man, Barb Mikulski told me about this. I was a kid when it was built. I remember the first time I drove through, it was so much cleaner and wider, and it was so white and bright and orange lights when you would go. And it was a smaller tunnel than the Harbor Tunnel that I had been through 1,000 times going to the airport. And, you know, like anytime you went to Washington, you know, like all of that. And I grew up in that weird spot in East Baltimore. And I met friends of mine. I'll never forget this. I still to this day, I have friends that are from like Pikesville or from, let's say, west of 83, anywhere toward like Woodlawn, anywhere in that area. They've never been through the tunnels. Like they just, why would I go through the tunnels? Like it's not a part of my life. I'm from Dundalk, changed my life. Like, right. The tunnel went to a different way, got us downtown to skipjack games a lot quicker, like in 82, 83, 84. And I'm saying that like very purposely because I took the bus most places, but when I hitched a ride downtown in 8 minutes, it was unbelievable. You know, they built the highway. And I don't know what the alternatives were, but I can't imagine life without 95 going down the east side of the city. I don't know much about the road to nowhere because I'm not from West Baltimore in that challenged area and like how it effed things up. I know it effed things up because everybody 50 years later, it's there. It certainly didn't help the neighborhood. But give me a little bit of that play because Mikulski, and I encourage anyone to go listen to the senator. It's all out there. She's awesome. It's time well spent. An hour and a half with Babs a couple years ago, sitting talking, telling these stories. Unbelievable. But she told me the story about Mayor Schaefer, who she battled with. And I didn't really know that because I thought they were freaking friends. I mean, in my adulthood, it seemed like that wasn't an issue. That they were all hands together in Island Town at Patterson Park and loving up the city and the city fair and like all that, right? Because I remember that from my childhood. But she told me that Mayor Schaefer called her and said, "You're going to get your ass kicked. You're going to get steamrolled over there in East Baltimore. I'm coming to get you." And next thing you know, didn't happen that way. And so this book is a little bit of like homework for the beach for me on how that happened. But clue me in a little bit. Am I telling that story sort of kind of the right way or am I wrong about that?
Yeah. So Mikulski and Schaefer were elected in the same year, 1971, really taking office at the end of 71 and then 72. And at that time, Schaefer was still in charge, and it was his number one priority. And Mikulski was unable to stop the highways through city council action. And she tells a great story about what happened, because she thought she had the votes lined up to at least make it close. But instead of a close vote, she got a lesson in the strong mayor form of government. And, you know, the mayor had twisted some arms, and she only got 4 votes out of 18 for her challenges to the expressway system.
An early lesson in politics for the senator, right?
Right. So it was not Mikulski's actions in city council that held sway, but Mikulski was just the most visible and articulate spokesperson for the highway opposition. And the news media just loved her because she could boil an issue down. When they were talking about a tunnel through Fells Point, Mikulski called it a tube of pollution. She had all these terms like all the people who were being relocated by the highways. She called them the new refugees. My favorite was there was a consulting team called the Urban Design Concept Team, and she called them the Urban Design Concrete Team. And these clever ways of phrasing the highway issue were so characteristic of Mikulski. And of course, the news media loves the sound bites because, you know, she can come up with the opposition position in a 15-second whir of memorable words. It was not a specific action that Mikulski took that stopped the highways. It's more that she was the spokesperson for the whole anti-highway movement. There are people who say that Mikulski has exaggerated her role in the expressway wars. I'm not one of those. I think she played a very significant role. But I did want the book to highlight all of the other unsung heroes who deserve, you know, about equal credit with Mikulski. And I was very happy to be able to interview some of them. Stu Wexler, who was the guy who was behind the organizing of the citywide anti-highway movement called the Movement Against Destruction, or MAD.
1974, right? Literally, right?
Pardon?
1974, the new MAD. I like that.
That was actually, 1974.
When that was formed. This was when these wars were going on, right?
So this was 1968.
Even earlier. Okay. So it was so these people have been going at this 6, 7, 8 years before the money was appropriated. This went on a long time.
Well, the money was appropriated starting in the mid 60s.
Okay.
And really, we were kind of lucky, I think, that the highways did not get built in the mid 60s because the opposition was not very organized. And in 1966, the federal government passed a couple of laws that were very helpful to the highway opponents. One was in the Transportation Act. It required the Federal Department of Transportation to take into account any incursion into parks and historic areas. And those changes at the federal level were very helpful to our highway opponents, and without them, we probably would be living with that awful highway that goes through Federal Hill, Fells Point, and Canton.
Or putting a highway through Patterson Park or something stupid because they weren't going to displace anybody, right? Literally.
Yeah.
Somebody might have had that idea back in 1965.
Well, yeah. Lincoln Park is a case in point. Lincoln Park, the highway was supposed to go right through the middle of Lincoln Park and then come down through Rosemont to link up with what's now called the Highway to Nowhere. And Lincoln Park is a gem. You know, a lot of people don't go to Lincoln Park because they've heard about bodies being ending up there. But Lincoln Park is a wonderful park. I urge everyone to go out on the trails and experience Lincoln Park. It's a very rare, more or less wilderness park in the city. It has old growth forests, meaning that it was never logged. It's a huge asset that people need to take advantage of.
Well, I hope to have you on, have a crab cake with you one day, talk some more about this. I could go all day. I mean, I could say, what about this place? What about that place? What about the red line? We can get after it, but you should get after the book, Stop the Road, Stories from the Trenches of Baltimore's Road Wars. Evans Paul is my guest talking. It's not all Baltimore positive, right? Not all these things are positive, but I'll just leave you with this. Is there one thing you'd say that you've learned in all of this that you could distill down for somebody to make them go buy the book and say, this is an interesting historical way of looking at the city?
I would just say that people need to get to know who these people were who kind of miraculously were able to hold sway over the engineers and the political establishment, and the economic interests. And it's a tremendous irony that all those interests were backing highways that would have eventually been very detrimental to Baltimore. I think people just need to get to know who these people were. Bob Eney, he was one of the leaders of the fight over the highway through Fells Point. And he's just the most interesting guy. He was dyslexic to the point that he could hardly write a sentence, but he was possessed with this just unbridled enthusiasm and knowledge of architecture and history. And he was the guy who led the effort for Fells Point to get the documentation together, to establish the historic area. And it was the historic area that was the leverage to get the highway stopped through Fells Point.
Are you saying the Admiral Fell and Berthus helped save a tunnel from going from Fells Point across the harbor?
The Admiral Fell? Well, the Admiral Fell in was in the highway right of way, by the way.
All right. For all the beer I've ever drank in Fells Point, I'll make sure to read this just to thank the forefathers from 40 years ago to make sure this didn't happen. Evans, congrats on the book, man. And I one day we will get together. What's that?
Thanks so much, Nestor. Yeah, good. And if you want to have an Oriole fan on next year when the Orioles are in first place, I'm your man.
All right. Well, they'll begin the season in first place because they'll win on opening day. That's my prediction. I'm going to bet on the $5 to win on opening day. How about that, Evans?
Okay.
That way you'll know I'm on your side here. You know, no one loves the Orioles more than me. It's just I need them to love the city back. So my last name's Aparicio. It's how I got here. You can interview me about my Venezuelan heritage, my cousin coming over here in the 60s. How about that?
Okay.
Evans, I appreciate you, man. We'll get some baseball in. Evans Paul, go check the book out, Stop the Road, Stories from the Trenches of Baltimore's Road Wars. We're going to get the Maryland Crab Cake Tour going again. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I'll have some Raven scratch-offs to give away. Also, our friends at Goodwill. I'm wearing my Goodwill gear today from my pal Lisa Raciniak. Remind everybody, Halloween. whether you're going to dress like Aladdin Sane, Ziggy Stardust, the Thin White Duke, you know, however you want to do it. I'm going to be four different David Bowies, my family, for Halloween. Get your Halloween gear at Goodwill. Also, our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. Let them know I sent you in. Let them know. When you call them, you order your window, say, man, Nestor's really happy with his, because I am. So there, have at it. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive. Telling road stories.